Okay, very good afternoon to all. So today is the first day of 2014, our first class for Wu Bing Jing Se. We completed the Heart Sutta last year. So this year we're supposed to start on a new format. So hopefully 2014 will be a good year for Dhamma to flourish. So what I had actually received from the email through some of the Kayanamita friends' suggestion is they wanted to do this topic on the four foundation of mindfulness, which was proposed by Engbi, Sati Patana Sutta. So the suggestion was very good. But I told her, before we do that, we need to develop some understanding of the essential Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. Because unless you understand all this essential Dhamma, it's very difficult for you to understand the Satipatthana Sutta. Because when you go into Satipatthana Sutta, the four foundations of mindfulness, we're supposed to develop the meditation straight away. Means you're supposed to understand what those things are. That's why when the Buddha said you're supposed to have mindfulness, heedfulness, then you're supposed to train your mind, anapanasati, and all those things. Why you do all these things? They are all very, very difficult to understand. So if you don't have some basic understanding of what sati is, what heedfulness is, and what the three evil roots are, the essential Dhamma, then the three wholesome roots, then the four noble truths, then the five aggregates of form and mind, the five hindrances, then you also have what they call the five mental faculty, spiritual faculty. Then you accumulate into what they call the seven factors of enlightenment. So all this essential Dhamma involve a lot of very basic understanding of the Buddha's essential teaching, especially the Four Noble Truths. So within the Four Noble Truths, all of his teaching are there. So all of his sutta or discourse or teaching that he shared with the monk at that time, they are spin-off from this Four Noble Truths. So within the First Noble Truth, you have the final summary that talks about, in short, all of suffering comes about because of your attachment or craving that caused you to cling and grasp onto this five aggregate of form and mind. So this five aggregate of form and mind is also a very big topic, a very major essential Dhamma that need to be understood. That's why after today, essential Dhamma, the next one, we will have one more Sunday before we break for Chinese New Year. Today is the 12th. 12. So 19 will be our last class before the Chinese New Year. Then we will take about 3 weeks break. Means 3 sessions we will break. Then after the New Year, we will come back. So when we come back, it will be about, I think, February the 9th, if I'm not wrong. February the 9th. So February the 9th, we will officially start the four foundation of mindfulness, or what they call Satipatthana Sutta. Come, join us. Yeah, sit down. I was told some of you are new, first time here. Okay, those who just came in, have have a seat on a chair, I think, for her. Ah, good. You can sit on the stool. Amitabha for her. I can sit on a stool. Okay, we welcome those who are new. Okay, like you can see on the whiteboard. So this year's format, we are going to change a bit. We will start off with whatever Dhamma discussion topic that are relevant and appropriate. So there was a suggestion to do the four foundation of mindfulness, or Satipatthana Sutta. So this is the first topic that was proposed. So we should thank Sister Ng Bee for initiating that topic, which was very good. And she also took a lot of trouble to actually firm up the thing that she wanted us to go through. So all those were in the email. So I will discuss with her further when she's around later on. But for the meantime, as I explained just now, before we really go into the four foundations of mindfulness or Satipatthana Sutta, you need to understand certain essential Dhamma. So the title of today's talk is Understanding the Essential Dhamma as Taught by Buddha. So this essential Dhamma, they are very useful, very important. This is how you start. If you don't understand this essential Dhamma, actually, it's very difficult for you to start the cultivation. And it's very difficult for you to put it to practice. So what are the essential Dhammas that the Buddha focused on? The first one, as you can see on the whiteboard, is the Four Noble Truths. How many of you are not familiar with this essential Dhamma? Haven't heard before? You all haven't heard before? Oh. Are you completely new to Buddhism? Oh, okay. Traditional Chinese Buddhist. But did you receive any Buddhist education? Or no? Did you on your own study or read up a little bit on the teaching? What is it? Recently. Very good. They got this ancient Pahona. Miss Lei. Oh, they don't have. You have some? You know Mandarin? Oh, don't know. Then you got the English one? No, English one we have. You don't have any copy here? Oh, never mind. I asked my wife to bring some and leave it here. We had actually printed recently about near to 2,000 copy, I think. Near to 2,000 copy. Then WAVE is the what they call Buddhist organization that help in the printing of all this Dhamma book, Buddhist book. And because of the printing, we requested for about 500 copies. So most of it has been distributed all over the country. Then for the 500 copies that we had distributed quite a bit to all those donors and Dhamma friends. But there are still about 100 over copies available. So if you don't have, we will pass it to Miss Lee. Then you can collect from Miss Lee maybe the next Sunday. So for the Chinese New Year break, next Sunday will be our last class. Then we break for 3 weeks. Then we will return on the 9th of February. 9th of February. And then we officially start the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, or Satipatthana Sutta. You see, this Four Foundations of Mindfulness is a very unique teaching. I have here a book written by Chief Reverend K. Sri Dhammananda on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. So this is the sutta during the Buddha's time where he told the monk, you must understand and put to practice this sutta, because this is the only way, according to the Buddha, you can free your mind. So I will read to you the opening statement so that you understand. The four foundation of mindfulness of Satipatthana Sutta. Thus have I heard. These are the famous opening statement by Ananda usually. At one time, he said, the Blessed One, means the Buddha, was living in Kurus at Kamasadana, a market town of the Kuru people. Then the Blessed One addressed the bhikkhu or the monks as follows. He said, O monk, this is the only way for the purification of beings, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for the destruction of suffering and grief, for reaching the right path, for the attainment of enlightenment or nibbana, namely the four foundations of mindfulness. See, there is the reason why this particular sutta or discourse is the most important, because like the Buddha said, this is the only way for you to actually purify your mind, overcome all of your suffering, sorrow and lamentation. Then this is the only meditation or way that can lead you to the enlightenment. So with this as a what they call significant Dhamma that the Buddha need you to understand, so that you too, if you understand what his teaching is, walk the path, then you can, like he said, reach the right path and realize the enlightenment. Enlightenment to the Buddha is about developing wisdom that will allow you to understand life and liberate your mind so that you don't have to suffer anymore, so that you will live the happy life, the peaceful life, the noble life that is free of all suffering. No matter what happened in the world after that, when you are enlightened, the Buddha said, you will not be affected by anything that happened, any situation that arises. There will be no fear, no worry, no anxiety, no sorrow, no lamentation, no sadness or unhappiness. There is only peace, there is only joy, because your wisdom will allow you to have that understanding to make your mind peaceful, to prevent you from being deluded by what happened. So this is the sutta that we supposed to focus on. It's quite a long sutta, and all of the practices are there. So to understand this sutta, you need to understand some of the essential Dhamma which are very useful. So today, I will zero in on the first few essential Dhamma. So the first one, like I mentioned, is the Four Noble Truths. So for the benefit of those who are new, then for the older student or those who are already quite familiar, you can take it as a revision. But it's very important that you listen attentively. Okay. The first essential Dhamma that the Buddha teaches is the Four Noble Truths. These Four Noble Truths are not ordinary truths. They are very unique and special truths. Because these truths, they are called noble truths with a good reason. The Buddha said they are noble truths because when you understand this truth, you can become noble ones. And noble ones during the time of the Buddhas are called enlightened ones. They are enlightened ones because they are very noble in their understanding of life, very noble in the way they conduct themselves. They have very noble speech, action and thought process. Then they live their life in a very noble way. Then they have a lot of noble cultivation. they are very diligent in the way they cultivate. They got the four right effort to constantly purify their mind, their thought. Then they also develop the mindfulness or heedfulness to cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness. And in the process, they develop samadhi. So the whole of the Noble Eightfold Path will be covered. And because of that, they become noble ones. Noble ones, as I say, are enlightened ones. During the time of the Buddha, they are called the Aryas. That's why the Four Noble Truths are called Arya Satya. Satya is truth. Aryas are noble, noble ones. So, noble truth. And this is the essential teaching that the Buddha realized immediately after his enlightenment under the Bodhi tree in India. Those who went, they will know, Bugaya. Bugaya, there is this Mahabodhi temple, and there is a Bodhi tree. That was the location where the Buddha attained or realized his enlightenment about 2,600 years ago. So, Bugaya is a very, very special place. It is the place where the Buddha realizes enlightenment. And this is why all the pilgrimage, when they go to India, they make sure they visit this place, Bugaya. So, after explaining to you the meaning of this Noble Truth, now we will go in to develop the understanding. You see, the Buddha, he has cultivated for a very, very long period of time. According to the Sutta, it has taken him almost four world cycles, or asankhya kappas, to actually perfect his understanding, leading to the fully enlightened quality that he possessed. So he is called not only a Buddha, but Sammasambuddha, fully enlightened one. Perfect in wisdom, perfect in virtue. And because of that, he has great wisdom. And he can summarize to you all of life, both the mundane and the supramundane, into just four noble truths. So indirectly, this essential Dhamma that he teach is so powerful, to the extent that when you understand this Four Noble Truths, you understand all of life, whether it's the mundane aspect or the supramundane aspect. Supramundane is the unconditioned, beyond this world, related to the enlightened state of being. Mundane is condition arising, existential, within this world. That's why all of the life that you experience and you come to understand through the internet or through the books that you have read or the media that you have read, they are all summarized into this Four Noble Truth. So because of that, this is a very powerful teaching. So I always tell myself, it's like the whole of the secret of life, is there. So when you understand this Four Noble Truth, like you understand the secret of life, that's why you understand life. You know how to live, and you know how to free, and you know how to actually experience the good life, the noble life of the enlightened one. So basically, Buddhists, their ultimate goal is to realize this Four Noble Truth, leading to the enlightenment that is needed. So I will now go into the Four Noble Truths. Then after that, you will understand why it summarizes all of life for you to understand, so that you can develop the wisdom that is needed for you to live life. The Buddha said in this whole universe, existential world, under the first noble truth, he said, there is a noble truth of suffering. In Pali, it's called dukkha. Yeah. So this noble truth is a very powerful truth, the Buddha said. As long as you live life long enough, you will experience a lot of realities or confront a lot of what they call realities of life and existence. And when you confront them, if you don't have the understanding or the wisdom, suffering is the result. So what he wants you to understand is this first noble truth talk about the prevalence of suffering in this world. Suffering is everywhere if you don't have the wisdom before you confront them. So these 8 conditions are very important. And you check back, it relates to your entire life and existence. First, he said, within this first noble truth when he proclaimed, he said, the first 4 realities are birth, old age, sickness and death. He said, each and every living being, as long as you live long enough in this world, you will experience them. Everybody who is born into this world, they will go through old age, sickness and death. And when you confront old age, sickness and death, he said, when conditions are not so conducive or appropriate, suffering will afflict you. You will be affected by this reality. Especially getting old. The moment you get old, your body starts to deteriorate. Your senses starts to fail you. Then you start to develop a lot of sickness and disease. Then there is this fear of death. So that's why old age, sickness and death, they are 3 very, very real realities that you need to confront. That if you don't have the wisdom when you confront them, most living beings will suffer, he said. So this is the first noble truth. The first aspect, the first part of it, the first 4 reality. Then after that he continued, he said, as you go through life, you will experience many more things. The 5th reality is about separation. He said there is this reality of getting separated from your loved ones, from the things you own, from your wealth, your possession, your career, your business, and all those things that you think you own and hold on to dearly. So when separation happens, like when you lose them, and it can happen in many ways, sometimes due to death, sometimes due to nature's disaster, then you lose them and they separate from you. Then sometimes due to relationship failure. Relationship failure can bring about separation because it leads to divorce, understand? Or leads to separation from your loved ones. So all this reality can be very traumatic and it can bring about a lot of suffering if you do not understand who you are, what you are, and what this 5 aggregate of form and mind is all about. And what are your loved ones? It's all about. So if you attach and cling and grasp, believing that they are real, you are real, that's why you become emotional. You become afflicted. And through this delusion, the Buddha said, when you deludedly cling and grasp and hold on to all this, suffering will be the result. So the 5th reality is a very real aspect of life. That each and every one of us, as we go through life, as we experience life, somehow we will experience the separation. Then the sixth one is when you are with people whom you don't like, the Buddha said. Very difficult people. So nowadays you have heard about bullies, gangsterism, child abuse, even in the career line, sexual harassment and many other things. Then there are those bosses who are not so easy to work with. They put pressure on you and they harass you during the working period. So when you are with these people whom you cannot tolerate or accept or be with, suffering will be the result. Then even nowadays, there are quite a number of relationship aspect of this happening too. Because especially between daughter-in-law and mother-in-law, normally it's not easy for them to have good relationship. So if they cannot develop that ability to have good relationship, then when they meet up every day, suffering will be the result. When you are with people whom you don't like, whom you cannot, what they call, live with, then suffering will be the result. So this is the sixth. Then the seventh one, the Buddha said, when things don't go your way, when you cannot get what you want, when your expectation in life are not met, suffering will arise. So if you reflect and contemplate into this seven reality, you will come to understand human being has a lot of this problem. Throughout the day, actually, you experience them in certain form. But the most serious one are your expectation in life. When you expect your boss to understand you, to promote you, to love you, to care for you, or when you expect your loved ones to understand you, to be concerned for you, to love you. When it doesn't happen, your expectations are not met, you become very unhappy. Then you become very disappointed. Then sometimes jealousy arises, envy arises. So this is something that you need to look into. When you confront them, these are the reality mentioned by the Buddha under the teaching. Then after he finished this seven, there is a final one, the eighth reality. In short, he summarized all of your suffering. The reason why it arises is because of your ignorance, your delusion, that conditioned you to cling and grasp onto this so-called five aggregate of form and mind that he called the human being or the living being. Because you believe this human being or this living being, which has a physical body, a physical form, and a mind and a consciousness. The mind, he can subdivide into four more aggregates, and he called them the aggregates of feeling, perception, activity of mind, or thinking, mental states and all things, and consciousness. But this is what your mind can do. Your mind can feel, can perceive things, can bring about emotion, mental states, thinking. Then it can become conscious of what he see, what he hear, what he smell, what he tactilely feel and think. These five aggregates of form and mind, he say, they are not you. They are empty. They are impermanent. If you grasp, cling and hold, suffering will be the result. And you cannot see this reality, you cannot understand this reality, then you deludedly believe this is you. That's how your suffering comes to be. He said when you cling to this physical body, you will have fear. Fear that you will one day die. fear that you will get old, get sick. Then you fear separation from the world, from your loved one, from your possession and all that. So this is what the Buddha meant. When you attach and cling to this physical body or to the aggregates of mind, suffering will be the result. So this is the final summary. So the first noble truth, we have completed it. Now we move on to the second noble truth. The Buddha said, the first noble truth talk about realities of life and existence. If you don't have the wisdom, when you confront them, suffering is the result. So suffering is everywhere. Prevalence of suffering. You need to be very, very careful. Then he explained under the second noble truth, he said, there is a cause behind all suffering. Whatever suffering that arises, there is a cause. And the cause is basically like what he explained under the final summary, your delusion that conditions you to grasp and cling and hold on to this five aggregate of form and mind. That clinging, that grasping, he called it craving. So the second noble truth explained to you, whenever you have craving and attachment or grasping and clinging to this five aggregate of form and mind, suffering will be the result. So when you understand what suffering is and how it comes to be, you will have an understanding of how you suffer, isn't it? Correct or not? Then you can manage it better, isn't it? If I know what suffering is and how it comes to be, I will know how to do something about it, manage it better, so that in future I don't have to go through this suffering. So that I can bring about an understanding to allow me to free from this suffering. So basically the third and fourth noble truth teach you how to do all these things. So after you have understood the first noble truth of suffering, what suffering is and the cause behind, the third noble truth, the Buddha gives you a very good assurance. He said there is a noble truth that talks about the end of all suffering, cessation of all suffering. And this noble truth points to enlightenment, he said. Suffering need not be. Enlightenment in the here and the now is possible. The only thing you need to do is to cultivate this so-called meditation that he has taught us. Then if you can awaken to it, you can realize the enlightenment, then this so-called suffering will cease to be. So this is a noble truth. And it can be realized before you die. Right. So that's why the third noble truth is very unique. It gives you a very strong assurance that liberation from birth and death is possible. Escape from the conditioned world, the suffering world, is possible. With that understanding, then you know old age, sickness and death will not be a problem, because there will be no more birth. When there is no more birth, there is no more old age, sickness and death. So enlightenment is about transcending birth and death. Realizing a state which they call Nibbana, which is beyond birth and death. Beyond thought, beyond mind. So that's why the third noble truth is very unique. Then after that, the Buddha move on. He said, there is a fourth noble truth that teach you how to walk this path leading to the enlightenment. And the fourth noble truth mentioned very clearly the noble eightfold path. He said there is this noble eightfold path. If you cultivate this noble eightfold path, it will lead to the cessation of all suffering. It will lead to the end of all suffering, which is the realization of enlightenment, Nibbana. So under the sutta, the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, immediately after the Buddha realized his enlightenment, when he went up to meet up with the five monks or ascetics that followed him last time, he delivered that first sermon. And that first sermon talked about the Four Noble Truths, nothing else. That's why it's a very important teaching. And during that time, before he finished the sermon, one of the five monks became an enlightened one, Kondanya. So, this Four Noble Truths, according to the Buddha in that first sermon, he said even he himself, as a Bodhisattva or Buddha to be earlier on, he need to cultivate this Four Noble Truths and develop the three turning understanding. Means he need to turn the Four Noble Truths three times so that that wisdom can arise and allow him to become the enlightened one. That's why in the sutta you read, it stated clearly, not until he himself, the Buddha to be, had realized this Four Noble Truths through his three turning or 12 mode, he cannot proclaim to be the enlightened one. So this three turning is very important. When you turn this Four Noble Truths three times, it will give rise to three types of corresponding wisdom. The first turning refers to Suttamaya Panya. Panya is wisdom. Sutta is the discourse of the Buddha. So after you have heard the teaching or the discourse as proclaimed by the Buddha, if you can awaken, develop some form of wisdom, then that type of wisdom is the first turning wisdom. He calls Suttamaya Panya, means wisdom born of hearing the sutta or the discourse taught by the Buddha. Now, that is the first turning. Then after that, the Buddha say, if you still cannot awaken, there is still a second turning that you can do to develop the wisdom. So under the second turning, he said, you must reflect, you must contemplate and inquire deep into what he has spoken. Means under the first turning, whatever that he has proclaimed under the Four Noble Truths, you reflect on it, contemplate into it, inquire into it, and then it will lead you to a deeper understanding. And that understanding, born of contemplation, reflection and inquiry into the Noble Truth that he has proclaimed, is called the second turning wisdom. He called it Chintamaya Panya. Then the third turning is about Bhavana Maya Panya. Bhavana is meditation, the meditative training. Wisdom born of meditative training. So that is the one, he said, when you put his teaching into practice or cultivation, then you can realize the third turning wisdom, means wisdom born of meditation. So this three turning, I will not elaborate on it because it's a very big topic. You have to go back and read it up yourself and do it yourself. So this is the first essential Dhamma that you need to understand. For those who are new, if you can get hold of this book, The Ancient Path, by Piyadasi. It's an orange book, free distribution, printed by Kayadamitas, Dhamma Friends. Read through it, then it will help you a lot. They are all there. The three turnings are also mentioned, but not explained. So that one, if you need to understand more, you try to get hold of the notes that I have given out earlier on. The email compilation note. Okay, after you have understood the Four Noble Truths, and roughly, briefly about the three turning, then the Buddha said, you have to move on. Move on to the next essential Dhamma. The next essential Dhamma that the Buddha advised the monk to do at that time is the five daily contemplation. Every day, you must reflect. You must contemplate into these five things so that you can develop the wisdom to free your mind before you confront the First Noble Truth realities, so that you can develop the right view with regards to certain nature's law that governs your life and your existence. So this part is very useful. The five daily contemplation, the whiteboard, I got no place to write, but it's recorded, so never mind. So hopefully, if you cannot grasp it fast enough, you have to listen to the recording again. The first three contemplation relates to this physical body of the living beings. For us, it's our physical body. So the Buddha said, every day you have to reflect and tell yourself, this body of mine is of the nature to grow old and decay, for it has not gone beyond old age and decay. This is the first contemplation. Then the second contemplation is, this body of ours is of the nature to get sick or be diseased when the condition is such. For it has not gone beyond disease and sickness. This is the second contemplation. Then the third one is, this body of ours is of the nature to die when consciousness separate from the form. For it has not gone beyond birth and death. So this three daily contemplation is to counter the first four reality of the First Noble Truth. Means when you confront birth, old age, sickness and death, you need not suffer anymore. Otherwise you deludedly cling and grasp. So contemplate, reflect means you tell yourself, this body of mine. That's why under the teaching, under the four foundations of mindfulness, the Buddha teach you on mindfulness of the body, body contemplation. He asks you to be mindful of this body, examine it, investigate into it. Then you realize it consists of four elements, nothing else, no knowing. That's why it cannot be you. Then there is this 32-part meditation. When the parts come together, it perform a function, you give it a name. Human being arise already, real. Like the block card analogy. But you take the parts away, the bowl of cards cease to be. So the human being also same. This is to let you understand that this physical body is not you. It go the way of nature. So that you don't deludedly grasp and cling onto it and develop all the attachment, the fear, the worry, the anxiety and the suffering. So this reflection and contemplation, which you do daily on this physical body of yours, will bring about a type of wisdom or an understanding that will allow you to be peaceful even when you confront them. So when the body is old or body is sick or when it's about to so-called die, because you have developed the wisdom and the understanding and you clearly understand what it is, what they are, you will not be deluded by it. So that's why you can be at peace. You can accept this reality. This body of mine go the way of nature. For it has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. So when you understand all this, your mind is different. There is no delusion. There is no attachment. There is no clinging. Then like the Buddha said, when the body is sick, the mind need not be sick. Means you can detach from this form. That's why when consciousness separate from this physical body, they call that person die, he said. Die means what? Who die? What die? Nothing die. But we deludedly say he or she die. Understand? Where we think is a real person. But the Buddha said, if you meditate, you will see very clearly these are all conditioned arising entity. not a permanent unchanging entity that you can hold on to or grasp on to and cling on to and say, this is me, this is I. That's why he teaches non-self, anatta. He teaches impermanent, leading to the suffering state and the non-self state or empty nature. So when you understand all this, the Buddha said, there is a type of wisdom that can protect you and liberate your mind. Then when you do not or does not deludedly grasp and cling onto this physical body, your physical form, then your mind becomes very peaceful, very calm. It's like mind is mind, body is body. The two are separate entities. Yeah. Then later on, as you meditate deeper, you will come to understand even the aggregates of mind behave the same. Your feeling, your perception, your activity of mind, and your consciousness, they also impermanent. They come, they go. They follow nature's condition. They are all condition arising, cause of phenomena. The moment you grasp and cling and want things your way, suffering will be the result. That's why the second characteristic is suffering. First one is impermanent. Yeah. And because they are impermanent, not a permanent unchanging entity, which you can hold on to, cling on to and grasp on to. That's why it's empty, non-self, anatta. Yeah. So these three universal characteristics, you will come to realize them. So you constantly reflect and contemplate, then you can overcome this first four reality of the first Noble Truth. Then after that, the fifth reality, you have to develop the fourth contemplation. Under the fourth contemplation, the Buddha said, every day you must reflect. Everything that I think I own, this body of mine, all of my loved ones, all of my, what they call, wealth, property, money, whatever things that I hold on to dearly, my business, my career, my reputation, my status, all this, the Buddha said, they are all conditioned arising, cause of phenomena. They are not real. They don't really belong to you. Because they are not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can hold on to and cling on to and grow on and say, this is me, this is I. Forever the same. Never get old, never get sick, and never die. Impossible. Yeah. So because of that, when you reflect and contemplate that it goes the way of nature, it's all condition arising, causal phenomena, you cannot own anything. And then you realize these things that you deludedly hold on to and cling on to and believe is you, they are not what they are supposed to be. And through this understanding or wisdom born of this daily contemplation, you will come to know when there is condition for them to arise and for you to own, that temporarily, like you own. But the moment conditions cease to be, or your breath stop, your whole identity is erased, gone. You cannot own anything. That's why separation will occur. So when you have deep the reflection and the contemplation into all these things, then you will no longer be tormented or afflicted when the time comes for this thing to separate from you. Yeah. When conditions cease to be, it will cease to be. The phenomena will cease to be. The entity will cease to be. That's why, either way, you don't own anything. That's why it's all empty, impermanent, non-self, empty. That will give you great wisdom to counter the fifth reality. Then the last contemplation is about attack on nature's law that you have to be very careful with. The Buddha said, you have to reflect on this law of karma. He said, each and every living being, not only us, human beings, you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. And you are what you are because of your karma. And this is a very powerful daily contemplation. If you keep on contemplating, then you ask yourself, if I want to take care of my life, if I know that this is a spiritual law, a nature's law, that governs all of my life and existence, that I am born of my karma, heir to my karma, and conditioned and supported by my karma. And this life, or every life when I come, I am what I am because of the law of karma, because of my karma. So what must you do? You must take care of karma, isn't it? Correct or not? If you don't take care of karma, your life will be miserable. So karma is you reap what you sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. So if you want to avoid suffering, you must avoid all evil. So when you have this right view with regards to the law of karma, you will know you have to take care of karma. You cannot violate this law of karma. That's why karma is something that will allow you to understand how to avoid getting into trouble. The law of karma is very powerful and is very real. So when you have that understanding, when you reflect and contemplate and wake up from the understanding, then you make sure you take care of karma. The moment you do that, your life will take a turn and your life will become very beautiful. Because if you take care of karma, you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma, and you are what you are because of your karma, your life will become beautiful. But if you are heedless, could and careless, and you neglect your life, you violate all the precepts, what will happen to your karma? Your karma will become very, very bad. And when you are born with that bad karma, what will happen to your life? When you inherit everything that your bad karma bring about, your life will be very miserable, full of suffering. So because of that, this right view, after you reflect and contemplate on this fifth contemplation that the Buddha talked about, you will become very serious about karma. So that's how the advice of all the Buddha comes about. He said, when we understand the seriousness of karma, means we need to take care of karma. How to take care? We need to avoid all evil. Do good. Then purify the mind. That's why Dhammapada verse 183, it comes from this right view. When you have this right view, this advice from the Buddha, you can understand why you need to do that. So it will bring us to the other essential teaching. Because in order to take care of karma, the Buddha said, you must train your mind to have this mindfulness to keep your precepts. That's why when you go to the temple, the beginning puja is to pay respect to the Triple Gem. Then after that, chant your salutation. Then followed by the three refuges, and then the five precepts. The five precepts is to protect you from committing evil. These are moral rules. So, if you look at all the precepts, who are the ones that violate this precept? They are those who have the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Means they are evil people. That's why the Buddha called it the three evil roots, which is the next fourth category of Dhamma. So whenever the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion appear, they are the root of all evil. That's why you must not have selfishness. You must not have emotional negativity, anger, jealousy, hatred, and all those things. Otherwise, your life will become miserable. You become an evil person. Because the evil roots makes you evil. They are the roots of all evil. So selfish people, lustful people, greedy people, they have this evil root of greed. Then emotional, angry, evil. All these people with emotional negativity, a lot of anger, jealousy, envy, and hatred, they are full of evil. So that is the evil roots of ill will. That delusion is not understanding this law, nature's law, spiritual law, law of karma, the Four Noble Truths, and how your mind functions, the 12 links dependent on it. So when you lack this understanding, and when you do not have the wisdom to see clearly through your meditation who are you, what are you, and you deludedly grasp to the five aggregate form and mind, the Buddha called that delusion, Sakkaya Ditti. So when there is delusion, suffering will be the result. There will be fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. So this aspect of the teaching of the Dhamma is very, very important too. Then the Buddha said, in order to overcome this tree evil root, you need to cultivate the opposite tree. He said, to overcome greed, you need to cultivate the wholesome Dhamma that he called Dana. Dana is generosity. If you cultivate generosity, you will have a generous heart. You will not be greedy. And this is how you start. To develop cultivation, you must have merits, generosity, merits. And when you have generosity, your heart can counter all of the greed, the lust, the selfishness that are within your evil state of heedless mind. Then in order to overcome hatred and delusion, he said, you have to keep your precepts. When you keep your precept, you are incapable of evil. That's why people who keep their precept, they don't have selfishness, they don't have greed, they don't have delusion. Otherwise, they cannot keep their precept. Very difficult. So precept is a training rule that you have to train until you finally do not kill, do not steal, do not commit sexual misconduct, do not lie, cheat or deceive, and do not partake in intoxicants. So when you are capable of holding on to your precept, then it can counter all the three evil roots. Then finally, you need to develop the meditation, which is bhavana. When you develop this meditation, it will overcome your delusion, your wrong view, your ignorance. So that's how the three wholesome dhamma counters the three evil roots. Then you have Dhammapada verse 1, 2. 183 is the advice of the Buddha. Just now we already gone through. Yeah? Then 21, 22, 23 is on meditation. This is the whole section on heedfulness, apamada. So the Buddha said, under Dhammapada verse 21, for those who are new, you are not familiar with Dhammapada verse, these Dhammapada verses are the sayings of the Buddha. They are very powerful because the Buddha is so wise. He is able to come out with 423 verses of truth, Dhammapada sayings that are eternally applicable, never get obsolete. So that is the power of the Dhammapada saying. So these Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23 are also truth that the Buddha spoke about. So these are very powerful spiritual truth. So under Dhammapada verse 21, he said, heedfulness is very important. Heedfulness, if you don't develop them, it will bring about downfall. It will bring about suffering. So heedfulness, the Buddha said, is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. So when you hear this Dhammapada verse saying, what must you do? You have to determine to be heedful, understand? And how to do that? That's why before the Buddha passed away, before his parinibbana, he repeated two very essential instructions to the monks. He said, apamadena sampadeta. He told the monk to strive on your heedfulness. Because the moment you are heedful, you are destined for enlightenment. You will not fall. But if you are not heedful, you will fall. And suffering will be the result. So, he said, strive on with heedfulness. Do not be heedless. And this 22, 23, they are Dhammapada verse that reinforce Dhammapada verse 21. Under verse 22, the Buddha said, the wise one, when they distinctly sees the big difference between heedfulness and heedlessness, they will intend on heedfulness. And because of that, they will rejoice in the realm of the Aryas, or the enlightened one. So that's why, again, reconfirm that you intend on heedfulness, you will become enlightened one, or Aryas. Then verse 23 confirm everything and define clearly to you what heedfulness is. He said, the constantly meditative, ever mindful, and steadfast one, they will realize the bond-free Nibbana, which is the enlightened state. Yeah. What is constantly meditative? Yeah. Just now we went through the Four Noble Truths. Huh? The last Noble Truth that talks about the Noble Eightfold Path that will lead to the end of all suffering, that is the meditation. Understand now? If you cultivate that, you free your mind, you liberate your mind. It will bring about enlightenment. So that is the meditation. So when it comes to verse 23, when the Buddha mentioned constantly meditating means constantly cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path. Yeah. That ever mindful means you have trained your mind to be constantly aware, ever mindful. And steadfast one means if you hold on to these two practices steadfastly, you will realize the bond-free Nibbana, yeah, the enlightenment. So this one confirmed 100% very clearly. You only need to train your mind to be heedful. After that, you are destined for enlightenment. Yeah. Then Dhammapada verse 1 and 2 explain clearly to you what life is all about. He said, Dhammapada verse 1 leads to suffering. Dhammapada verse 2 leads to happiness in this world. So he said, it's your life. You decide. Because each and every one of us, we hold the key to our own life destiny. To be happy or to be miserable is entirely your choice. So Dhammapada verse 1 and 2 is a twin verse. These are the opening statement of the Dhammapada. That's why they are very important. So the first two verse explain to you clearly how you can decide your life. Both verse starts with a common phrase. He said, your mind is the forerunner of all things, and mind is chief. When mind arises, everything comes to be. So under Dhammapada verse 1, he said, if one were to be heedless, means you don't care about life, then when you act, speak, and think with a wicked mind, with a heedless mind, that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, such a being, he said, suffering will follow them, like the wheel that follow the hood. You don't have to believe him. You can go and check and investigate into this Dhammapada verse. The moment you have selfishness, the moment you have emotional negativity, envy, jealousy, and fear, and delusion, you go and check what happened to your life. Suffering will follow you. Yeah. Because the three evil roots are the roots of all evil. Cause your karma to fall, and you reap what you sow. And when you are born from your karma, born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. And you are what you are because of your karma. So if you are heedless and don't take care of karma, if your karmic nature become very, very weak and very negative, what will happen to your life? you will suffer. That's why suffering will follow you, like the wheel that follow the hood. Whereas if you want to change your life, the Buddha say, can take care of mind, he say. Because mind is the most important, it's the forerunner of all things. When mind arises, everything comes to be. So if you diligently train your mind to be ever mindful, to be heedful, so that you will act, speak, and think with a pure mind, a wholesome mind, free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Such a being, he said, happiness will follow you, like your shadow that never leaves you. So now, after knowing this essential Dhamma, you will know how to live. Right? If you choose to be heedless, don't blame anybody for your misery or your suffering. But if you know how to choose to be heedful, to train your mind, and to diligently cultivate this teaching, then he guarantees you enlightenment in the here and the now is possible. That happiness will follow you, like your shadow that never leaves you. So these are the essential teaching that you need to understand. Then the last part is about the five mental hindrances and the five spiritual faculties. These two are also very essential Dhamma before you start meditation, is it? The reason why you are not peaceful and your mind cannot meditate is because you have these five mental hindrances. From the word, you know, they hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of peace and calm. Okay? And there are five mental hindrances. I just read through, because today I just want to summarize. There are sensual desire, ill will, sleepiness or sloth and torpor, third one. Then restlessness of mind, due to your fear, worry, anxiety, sadness, there is this restlessness of mind. Then the last one is doubt. So when your mind is full of this hindrance, means it is heedless. It is not heedful. The reason being, the spiritual faculties are not there. So the Buddha, under the teaching, make it very clear. He said, in order to understand his teaching, in order to overcome the five mental hindrances that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of peace and calm, you must cultivate these five spiritual faculties, the opposite five. They are Sada, or confident in the Buddha and his teaching. And Virya is a spiritual zeal. Then mindfulness, Sati. That's why when you pay respect, you do it mindfully. Then when you sit and meditate, you silence your mind and develop this awareness within, the silent mind. Then leading to Samadhi, collectedness of mind, unwavering mind. So when you have Sati and Samadhi, you are sitting as they are, then the last spiritual faculty, wisdom, will arise. So when you have these five spiritual faculty, because they are spiritual faculty, they will make you very powerful spiritually. So that's why with these five spiritual faculty, automatically the five hindrances cease to be. This one you don't have to fight. The five mental hindrances, it will cease to be the moment you have your spiritual faculty. This is where a lot of people don't understand, and they don't know how to cultivate. So all of cultivation start with the five spiritual faculty and develop sati, mindfulness. Then use it to cultivate noble eightfold path, to understand the four noble truths. So sati or mindfulness leading to heedfulness is the most important. So when you understand this, you will know how to go about developing the meditation, developing the understanding of his teaching. So without spiritual faculty, you cannot understand his teaching. Very difficult, because the hindrances are there. Your mind, a lot of hindrances. It cannot move. So our pre-puja just now, when we just came in, we pay respect to the Buddha, then all the worthy ones, including Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and all things. Once you do that, you develop very strong faith, understand? You compose your mind. So sadha leading to virya, spiritual zeal, will be there. Then when you pay respect mindfully, you cultivate sati or mindfulness. So the first three spiritual faculty will be developed in the pre-puja. Yeah. Then when you chant the salutation, when you take refuge, when you recite the five precepts, the vibration will give you a lot of what they call sadha and virya. Then if you do it mindfully, again, the spiritual faculty is there. Yeah. So when sati is developed, you have to stabilize it through meditation, through the daily mindfulness. Then when it's stabilized, it will accumulate into samadhi, the collectedness of mind, the unwavering mind. So that when you come out into life, when you experience whatever sense experience, whatever you see, you hear, you smell, you taste, tactile feel or think, your mind does not waver anymore. You does not get fearful anymore, unhappy anymore. You don't react to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think anymore, because you have samadhi. Otherwise, you constantly react and become afflicted and become miserable. So these are the essential dhamma that I have summarized for you. Yeah? And for those who already developed the understanding to cultivate, it is like a revision for you all. Yeah? But for those who are new, it is something that is very useful that you need to study, go back and read up a bit, and try to develop the understanding. Because this summary is very important and it's very difficult to come by. Yeah? So if you cannot understand, try to request for the recording. Yeah? I think they will send it out through the email. Yeah? You leave your email contact, they will put you on the circulation. Then when they send it out for sharing, you can listen to it again. So you don't have to actually take any notes. The other email compilation note that I have given out, you still have or not, Miss Lee? You try to give them a copy. Otherwise, you can ask for Sui An. I think they have printed quite a number of copies there. So, okay. I have finished this essential Dhamma for today. Do you have any question? Whatever question that you want to ask, you can ask. If you understand, well and good. If you don't quite understand, you can ask. Because for those who are new, it's not easy. Because all of a sudden, you suddenly hear a lot of these things for the first time. But you need to understand. Like anything in life, you want to understand them, it takes a while. Even your education system, you have to study for at least 12 years before you go uni. After that, in the university, another 3 years minimum. Certain courses may take you 5 years or 6 years. Most of the courses complete in 3 years in the uni, 3 or 4 years maximum. So a total of your education system, 15 to 16 years. So you don't expect to understand this type of thing overnight. If you are new, you only need to develop the faith, the urgency to understand this teaching. Because what the Buddha wants you to understand is this teaching that he has come to realize, he called it the Buddha Dhamma, is very important to the living beings. Because it can make a big difference to your life. Not only this life, even your future life, life after life. So you see the importance of this and the urgency of this, then you should actually determine without even hesitating anymore to understand this teaching. Because the moment you understand, your life can become so different. You can awaken and develop that type of wisdom to be free from all suffering. Then you can live the noble life, the happy life, that is so different, that is so full of peace, joy and happiness, full of wisdom and understanding. And because of that, there is nothing in this universe, not only this world, that can make you unhappy and miserable anymore. Every day, every moment, you are very peaceful, very happy, and full of joy. Yeah. Even your boyfriend don't want you. No more problem. Even where there is separation, no more problem. Even when this body gets sick, get old, or pending death, also no more problem. Because wisdom can make a big difference. And the realization of the unconditioned. The unconditioned is the supramundane. That one will give you the wisdom to understand that this form of mind is not you. It's a conditioned arising entity, karmically conditioned out for you to use, to live life, to experience all of life. And then you are not deluded by it. Then you won't hold on to it, you won't cling on to it, you won't grasp onto it. That's why you don't suffer anymore. Then you realize there is an eternal nature within that never dies. Because it's never born. Whatever that is never born, never get old, never get sick and die. Understand? That's why it's called eternal life. The one life. That is your true nature, your true mind. So that one need to be realized through the meditation. The moment you can connect and realize that, it's like you understand the secret of life. You are no longer deluded, no more ignorant. Like you suddenly wake up. Hey, not what I think. This is not me. Hey, no me. Hey, no you. Oh, then so easy to live life, right now. Otherwise, a lot of problem in there. Ah, you worry about this fellow getting old, getting sick and die. Then worry about it losing his wealth, loved ones. Then worrying about your loved one, thinking that they are real, thinking that they belong to you, your children, your parents, your brothers, your sister, your good friend. So all this is delusion. So if you see the importance of this teaching, which I saw 40 over years ago, I never turned back. I just cultivate all the way. That's why for you all, my advice is reflect, contemplate, and go deep into the question of life. How many of you question life? You all never question your life. Who are you? What are you? Why are you here? Why is this world like that? How many of you really question life? Too good a life to question. Not until you go through life and encounter certain reality, you will never seek the spiritual understanding. Not until when you are quite old and near death, when you fear death, when you worry about birth and death, then only you look into religion. But by then, most of the time, it's too late. Like when you urgently need the toilet, you cannot ask somebody to build. It takes too long. So before you really need to go to the toilet, you must make sure you know where the toilet is. And the toilet is already there. Otherwise, life is the same. You must understand life before you confront them. Otherwise, it's suffering, misery. The first noble truth is very real. Almost all human beings, living beings, that don't have the wisdom, they will be afflicted. Suffering is a noble truth. That's why he said there is a noble truth that talks about the prevalence of suffering. He says suffering is everywhere. Wherever there is birth, old age, sickness or death, there is suffering. Wherever there is separation from loved one, your possession, your wealth, your whatever thing that you hold on to dearly, there is suffering. Then wherever there is people whom you don't like, it will lead to suffering. Then wherever, whatever situation where you cannot get what you want, it also leads to suffering. So in short, he said, if you are deluded, you will always suffer. As simple as that. Huh? So that's why you must determine, make haste in training your mind, developing this understanding and wisdom, so that you can free and liberate your mind before you have to confront any of this reality. Okay? Any question or not so far? Is it clear? Good. If you got any question, you better ask. Otherwise, we are going to the second session, which is meditation. Okay, we still got about 7 minutes. So if you got no question, you can take a break. Can bring your mom, is it your mom? To your washroom or what? We can take a break. Then we come back 4:30. We will start the second session. Yes.
Hi,
you got a question.
Okay. I'm still new.
Yeah.
So, I mean, whatever you've mentioned, I mean, I understand, but how do we actually cultivate it?
Okay, that is a very good question. You all heard the question, because she's still new. She roughly understand what was spoken, but the interesting question that she wants to know is, how is she going to develop the ability to cultivate this understanding? Which is a very good question. That's why the reason why I spoke on this topic is to allow you to have this condition to understand how to develop the cultivation. Because earlier on, like I explained before you all came in, they want me to discuss the topic on the four foundations of mindfulness. Satipatthana Sutta. And this is a very, very, what they call difficult sutta, very powerful, but very long and very difficult to understand. Where it's like the ultimate meditation, and it's very technical. You have to understand a lot of things before you can even start reading. Because everything that is written here on the sutta is a summary. Understand? It's just a summary. Understand? There's no explanation. Like under the last section, there are four foundations where you have to develop mindfulness, the Buddha said. First is your body, kaya nupasana. Then the second foundation is feeling. Then the third foundation is mind. Consciousness, content of consciousness. Then the last foundation is Dhamma, all the teaching that he has taught you, all the truth, all the essential Dhamma. So all this essential Dhamma that I have explained to you just now, if I have not explained, do you know under the fourth foundation, what did the Buddha teach? He said straight away you develop mindfulness of the five mental hindrances. If you don't even know what the mental hindrances are, how are you going to cultivate? Understand? If you don't even know what the spiritual faculties are, how are you going to cultivate? Then if you don't even know what are the five aggregates of form and mind, which is the next category of cultivation, how are you going to cultivate? Then after that, you have the internal six sense bases and the external six sense bases. And upon contact of mind, it arises the third respective sense or consciousness. So, 3 times 6 is 18. They call it the 18 sense drive. So, when you cultivate internal 6, external 6 and internal 6, you develop the wisdom to understand how you function as a human being. how consciousness come to be, and how upon arising of consciousness, what happened to the content of consciousness, and how the dependent origination, the dwelling that the Buddha taught, are activated, and how you see them in your meditation. Then after you have developed that, the Buddha said, the seven factors of enlightenment will arise. They will make you enlightened, because these are factors of enlightenment. And the first factor of enlightenment is, again, mindfulness, sati. That's why without mindfulness, you cannot start. It's only when you have trained your mind to be mindful through anapanasati or whatever skillful means, then only you can start. Then after you have become mindful, you use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, you become heedful. Then you use it to investigate into the teaching, all of the Dhammapada verse and the Dhamma that he has taught you. If they stand up to investigation, because they are truth, understand, nature's truth, you will stand up to investigation, then you have a lot of faith and confidence in the Buddha. Then you realize that he is so wise, his teaching is so beautiful, and is so relevant to life. So because of that, your faith will become strengthened, understand? It will become unshakable. Then your virya is also very, very stable, because when you understand it so beautifully, and when you investigate into it, and it stand up to investigation, it boosts your confidence. Then you are more determined to cultivate seriously. That's why your virya and sadha become very, very heightened until it become a spiritual power, balas. So when it reached that level, it become unshakable. Then your virya will drive you to cultivate, and your sati will become very stable too. That's how all your spiritual faculty will fall into place. So this is how, when you start to understand the seven factors of enlightenment, one by one it will lead you into the cultivation. And then after that, when the factors of enlightenment are perfected, you will definitely become enlightened, because these are the factors that will make you enlightened. That's why after that, the Four Noble Truths will be fully understood. That is the time you awaken under the third turning. That's why Four Noble Truths got three levels. First, you listen. Then you try to understand, like in the school, when you study a lecture. Let's say it's a new subject. You study science? Oh, you like physics? Ah, you don't like physics. First time you attend physics class, what happened? But like everything very new there. And the concept is also so new there. Interesting, but very difficult. But funny, you know, for me, I find that subject so easy, you know, so interesting. Whatever that is difficult for people, I find it easy. You know, I don't know why. But the very easy one, I make mistake. That's why I will not do well compared to the rest. But when the question is very difficult, the subject is very difficult, I will do very well. Well, that is my nature. So when it comes to physics, chemistry, biology, maths, and science, I'm very good. Especially physics. I like physics like anything. Even the teacher also scared of me. Because I can understand very fast physics. So just that subject, if it's something new and you don't have the previous knowledge, let's say past life you have not done it, then when you first time listen to it, you sure don't quite understand. So what must you do? You go back and quickly read the textbook, correct or not? Then you try to link what you can remember with the textbook. But the textbook is like recorded, understand? They are all there. So you read and read and read. Then after a few times, you realize the understanding starts to go in, understand? Then after you read, what do? You start to reflect on what is written. And you start to reflect on what your teacher say, understand? So when you reflect and contemplate into what the book say and what the teacher say, then you start to assimilate all this understanding and stabilize it, understand? As you stabilize them and assimilate them, the understanding become more stable, more deeper. This is the second turning wisdom. This is how you develop the understanding in stages. Then after that, you do the meditation. Means you really practice. Means exam. You go for exam. Means what? No textbook to see. Everything also cannot see. No note, nothing. You just go in. Empty-handed. That is the meditation part. Meditation, you don't use thought. You cannot recall anything. You have to sit down and open the textbook. It's not an exam anymore. It's a tutorial or a project. But if it's an exam, no textbook one. No textbook means what? In real life, you have to go through it. Understand now? And if you cannot pass, means you are still not good. Understand now? You have not really mastered it. But if you have already mastered it and very good, you go into the exam, you're very confident on. You open the paper, the question you see, you smile. Understand now? Oh, you know you sure do very well. Especially exam. So a lot of this exam, and you are very well prepared, you go in, you're very confident. Then you open. Wow, the question all like very easy. Means you know how to do. Then you confidently do. And you do very fast. There are certain paper, I remember, in the uni that time. It's supposed to be like, out of 8 questions, you have to do 5. You have to do 5. Quite a number of paper, I do until 6 or 7 now. I almost finish all the questions. Yeah, I like to do. Then the lecturer very good. He said, if you do more, we will take the best 5. Because he said that, so I keep on doing. Well, I finish my exam, the 5 questions very fast. Then after that, I continue to do. There was one paper, I think, I almost finished all the 8 questions. So it depends on how you develop that understanding. So cultivation part is simpler and easier when you have developed the initial understanding of the essential teaching, essential Dhamma. If I have not explained and you don't go back and read, reflect and contemplate and do your own second turning study, it's very difficult. Understand? Then whatever you don't understand, you go and consult your lecturer, your colleague, and you all have group discussion. That's how you study faster, and you understand faster. So Dhamma is the same. Among Dhamma friends, you discuss. Then if you still don't understand, you go and see the lecturer. Understand? Then you can try to pass your question and all those things. So it's quite similar, the Dhamma. So if you don't understand, you can come and see me, or ask me any question, or email to me. Then I will try to help you. Okay? So this is how the cultivation can come about. That's why I want to go into the explanation of the essential Dhamma first, so that you understand what these terminology are. Then you will know how to develop the cultivation. Otherwise, you cannot do it. If you don't even understand what they are, how can you start? You cannot start. Like the Four Noble Truths. If I have not explained to you, I tell you, you will end up like a lot of Buddhists used to tell me, what is the First Noble Truth? They always tell me life is suffering. Then they say, what for study Buddhism? Let's talk about suffering, no happiness. Understand? I say, are you sure the Buddha said life is suffering? He never said life is suffering. He said, there is this noble truth that talk about suffering, understand? And this noble truth explain to you why there is this prevalence of suffering. Suffering is everywhere in this world. But life need not have suffering, understand? There is this noble truth that talk about suffering. If wisdom is not developed and you confront them without this understanding, then suffering arises, understand? And this is a noble truth. Give me a minute. Hello? Hello? Because this understanding is very, very important. Understand? these are noble truths that can make you enlightened, noble ones. So when you develop this cultivation, your mind will be completely transformed. Character-wise, understanding-wise, personality-wise, you will become totally transformed. That's why you become a beautiful living being or human being. The real beauty, you know, your nature, you know, not physical beauty, but of course those who have good karma, they have a combination of both. Physically and spiritually, they are beautiful. But more important is to have a beautiful nature. When you have a good nature, people will like you. Actually, those who know how to choose friends and partner, they look for inner beauty. Those who look for external beauty will end up very disappointed on it. But human being is very funny, you know. The first criteria is external beauty. Once that one fails, they don't want to look at you. These are people to me who don't know how to choose. If you know how to choose, you should choose those with good heart, anasana, good nature. They are very good partners or very good spouse or friends. So look for inner beauty. Don't look for outward physical appearances. My wife used to say this: you choose a wife or a husband, you don't go and choose a flower vase. Flower vase is very beautiful, but it's still a flower vase, very fragile. No? Drop, prom, break already. But the inner beauty, nobody can take away. So when you really want to look for a good partner, don't look for a flower vase. Look for the one with the inner beauty, gem within. Okay. I already answered her question. Is there any other question? Yes. Yeah, use the mic. Otherwise, the recording, you cannot hear.
Brother Teo, can you please elaborate on... just now you mentioned about internal six sense bases and external six sense bases. How would we apply that in our meditation?
Okay, very good question. This one is part of the four foundations of mindfulness. The Buddha taught this under Dhammapada, Dhammanupassana, the fourth foundation of mindfulness. See, internal six sense bases refer to our physical senses and the mental, the mind. So you have an eye, you have an ear, you have a nose, you have a tongue, then you have a physical body. These are the five physical senses. Okay? They can allow contact of mind, understand? When you have contact of eye, means your eye, using this organ, together with the mind, when it make contact, then they will trigger sense or consciousness. Understand? That's why the eye can be capable of seeing. So whatever the eye manifests through that consciousness is a seeing consciousness. Understand? This is the capability of the mind. The mind can be conscious of what it sees. That's why seeing consciousness is possible. But to do that, the Buddha said, you need to have the sense basis, understand? You need to have the organ, the eye, that is functioning. Then the mind to make contact. Then there must be light, color, shape, and form, understand? These are called external sense data. They are the external sense basis. So the external sense data meet the internal sense basis. Then the mind that is there make contact. That sense of consciousness come to be, understand? So the Buddha always mentioned, he said, when you do this meditation, it is for you to trace the origination factor that condition you into that state of mind, understand? Let's say, take for example, when you are in the office, initially you are very happy, very peaceful, because you just came to the office, have a nice breakfast, then maybe you settle down. Then suddenly phone call. Then somebody start accusing you, scolding you, or your boss start telling you off. Then what happened? You become very, very unhappy, angry, emotional. Then, if you are a cultivator, you are mindful, you are heedful, then you start to understand. How come I become emotional? How come I have anger, unhappiness? What causes it? That's why the Buddha said you must trace the origination factor. If you don't trace the origination factor, you cannot reverse it. Understand? You have to understand how you become like that. Understand? So how do you trace? You silence your mind, reflect. Before I become angry, my mind was peaceful. But how come my mind suddenly stir up? And I reacted, and I become so emotional. And the emotion is a fear, no? It's a worry, no? It's an anxiety, no? It's an anger, it's a hatred, it's an evil root, no? And it will make you very eager, very evil, no? Do you want to have that? The three evil root is even called the three poison, no? When you keep this evil root, your selfishness, your anger, and your delusion inside your heart, they are the root of all evil. They make you very evil. And not only that, the Buddha said they are also the three poison. You know what is a poison? Kill you straight away. Means spiritually you are dead. Your spiritual life is gone. So that's why when you have this type of cultivation, when you have mindfulness, then you will trace the origination factor. And the Buddha always said it originates from one of your sense dog. Understand? In that case, the telephone is through your hearing. Before you react to that sense door consciousness, the hearing consciousness, you were peaceful, your mind will not stir. The moment you perceive it with negativity and fear, worry and anxiety, your mind stir. That's why the fear, the worry, the anxiety, the anger, the unhappiness, all starts to arise already. So this is the origination factor. So I know that this is how I get into trouble, how my mind get entangled, and how I become miserable and suffer with all the fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation. What must I do? I must reflect, contemplate, and retrospectively reverse it, isn't it? Means what? I must develop the wisdom out of it, isn't it? Otherwise I cannot reverse it, isn't it? I know I have to reverse, but I cannot do, understand now? I don't have wisdom. So how do you develop the wisdom? That's why the Buddha, under his teaching, he said there are five ways to overcome unwholesome thought. Understand now? Because when this thing comes, if you perceive it in negativity, it means wrong view. You cannot accept them for what they are, that's why you reacted, understand now? You had the ego say, how can he scold me like that? How can he blame me like that? Understand not? How can he do this type of thing to me? Again, the he, me, I, and all those things, the ego. So when the ego is affected, the wrong view will condition you to react. And there is craving, there is attachment. You want things your way. And you cannot get what you want. That's why you suffer. Understand? The fear, worry, anxiety, you're scared of losing that job. The insecurity. And yet you are unhappy because you feel that he has been unreasonable. Understand not? And you are being accused and blamed. So all this is what the Dhamma is, but nobody teach you. You cannot understand. So when there is wrong view, that condition, wrong thought means what? Wrong thought are thought that condition your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, and misery. Correct or not? That is what is happening. So there was a wrong thought. So how to abandon that wrong thought? The Buddha teach five ways. Remember? First way is what? Think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. Understand not? But in this case, it won't help you. Understand not? It make you peaceful for a while. Understand not? But the problem is still there. Next time your boss call out, you cannot, don't want to listen to him and say metta. Understand not? Cannot, it won't work. So what do? You reflect. Yes, the Buddha was correct. When I'm meditating, when I got envy, jealousy, anger, maybe during that time when I radiate metta, I become peaceful. But it doesn't solve my problem, understand not? So what must you do? Go to the second way. What is the second way? So fast you cannot remember. If you cannot remember all the, how can you cultivate? The second way is to think of the danger, the consequence of allowing this evil root to stay there. Understand not? It is the root of all evil. Understand not? If I still allow this anger, this fear to stay inside, what will happen to me? I will become miserable, right? And it will make me evil, right? Make me react and think until I become so fearful, understand or not? Until you can even go through depression, obviously. So what are you going to do? When you see the danger, when you reflect on the consequence of allowing this evil root to stay there, you will definitely determine to root it out, isn't it? Because you don't want to be evil, you don't want to be influenced by it, isn't it? So when you reflect and contemplate on the consequence of allowing this evil root to stay inside, you determine, I want to free myself. What must I do? I must cultivate wisdom. I must understand what is going on. Understand not? So that this evil root can be rooted out. And then you determine to do. And then the third way is what? You do meditation and yet you don't know this one. The third way is meditation, understand not? But not wisdom way. The Buddha say, just silence your mind, understand not? In the seeing, it's just the seeing consciousness. Understand not? So when you just silence your mind and relax, what happens? Whatever that is agitated, the stirring, the anger, the fear, the worry, the anxiety, the emotion, this is the energy field, isn't it? Condition arising, isn't it? Where you hold on to that thought, understand not? It's a wrong thought. But if you don't hold on to the thought, you just silence your mind and relax and let things be, what happened? Everything starts to slow down, understand not? Like Krishnamurti said, the very flowering of thought is the very ending of that thought, understand not? Like a flower. After a flower, it wither, understand not? It got no more energy. If you feed it, continue to feed it with the wrong thought, then it will become more and more powerful, understand? But you just silent and relax. Next time you try. When there is agitation, there is anger, there is fear, you try, silent. After a while, it will become quiet, peaceful. This mind originally was already silent, stillness, understand? It will return to its original state of silence and stillness. You don't have to do anything. That's why meditation is not about doing, understand? Meditation is about training the mind to be silent. When you are silent and aware, it's still. No thought. No thought means what? No fear, no worry, no anxiety. No stirring of mind. No delusion, understand? How to have no thought? Spiritual faculty, understand? If you have hindrance, a lot of thought. That's why they become heedless. They think a lot, understand? They worry. So when you meditate and silence your mind, then you realize all this settle down and you become peaceful again. And the moment you are peaceful, you know you have the answer to it already. Understand? I don't have to react anymore. Understand? So it will move you to the fourth way. The fourth way say, how can I not react? Understand not? Well, I have this wrong view. I need to understand how I get entangled. That's why the Buddha said the fourth way is to trace the origination factor. Then from that understanding, retrospectively reverse it. And that is what the internal sixth sense basis and external sixth sense basis is teaching you. That's why the Buddha said when you do that type of meditation, you will trace the origination factor. Well, before the phone call come, you will be peaceful then. So your mind stir because of what is being spoken, because you perceive it in negativity and react, understand? Then this whole thing come about. So you know this is the origination factor. So the Buddha said, in life, it's always this three door, very powerful. What you see, or what you hear, or what you think. The other three are not so dangerous. But the other three is smell, taste, and tactile. Worst come to the worst, I don't like that smell. It's not life and death. Or you don't like that taste. Then you go and wash your mouth. Or the tactile consciousness, too cold, too hot. Wear more warm clothing. Or go to the aircon room. Then your problems are. But what you see, what you hear, what you think can make you very miserable. Very fearful, very angry. So this is the one you have to trace. So the Buddha said, it's from one of your sense door. You go and trace. And then for getting angry is very easy. Or when you see somebody, there's a lot of fear. Because you don't like that person. Or that person is somebody who bullied you before. Or he know your secret and come after you. So you got a lot of fear. So that's why upon seeing or hearing, or sometimes the thought recall, there is fear. So when you trace the origination factor, you know how this thing come to be, then you ask yourself, you reflect and contemplate on the Noble Truth. What is the cause of suffering? What is the cause of suffering? Ignorant, that condition one. You don't go to the 12 link first. 12 link is very difficult, because that one you need to meditate. You go to the Four Noble Truths. The final summary is what? Craving, attachment, born of what? Self delusion, sakaya diti, understand not? When the self is involved, understand not? When the ego is involved, then it wanting his way, your way. When you cannot get what you want, you suffer, understand not? So that's why this is the cause of suffering. So you understand that there is a craving, there is a desire. Because you want to be peaceful, you want your boss to praise you, understand? Say, wow, Pak Masuri, you did a good job. You deserve a raise. Oh, I'm going to promote you. Wow, you're full of joy. This is what you like, to listen. But when he starts to scold you, accuse you, and say that you didn't really do what he asked you to do, and because of that, the company suffered great loss, and now he wants to make you responsible, and he wants to deduct your pay, and maybe give you a very nasty letter, or threaten to maybe dismiss you, or take disciplinary action against you. So what happened? If you perceive it with negativity and fear, you suffer. This is when you are with people whom you don't like. Then when you cannot understand what is going on. So what are you going to do? You're supposed to develop the wisdom to retrospectively reverse it. So you have to reflect and contemplate. How can I be free from all this negative influence in the future? My problem comes from my wrong view, Karena. From my attachment due to my sakaya diti. Then what did the Buddha say under the teaching of the 18th sense line? The Buddha always said, in the seeing is only the seeing consciousness. There is no one to see. In the hearing is only the hearing consciousness. There is no one to hear. And what is consciousness? Consciousness come and go. Understand? That's why sabbe vinyanang anicang. Sankara also anicang. Come and go. Understand? So, when I know that they come and go, means what? They are not real. They are not permanent. So, if I don't deludedly grasp, cling, and give meaning, it does not affect me. It's just vibration. Understand? Consciousness is just conscious. How come it has power to make me so miserable, so fearful, so emotional, understand? So stressful? It's because of your own delusion. You allow it to condition you into it through clinging, grasping, and holding on. So how to reverse it? Retrospective. When I understand this is how I get entangled, I will develop the wisdom not to be like that anymore. So next time when I hear, I will hear with understanding and wisdom. Means what? I will perceive that thing with clarity and understanding. Means consciousness is just consciousness. Come and go. But I have to live life, you know.
I cannot ignore everything, no. I cannot say, anicang dukang, anicang dukang, then forget about it, no. There is no such thing in life, no. Life, you need to live, no. Means what? The Buddha said, you have to learn to see things as they are. Understand, no? Jnana dasana, direct knowledge and vision of the reality. So if, when I see things as they are, I see another aspect of reality. Understand, no? Means I see your boss as what he is. Five aggregate of form and mind with the wrong view, getting angry and scolding you and insulting you, and you don't take it so personally because of the ego, then you accept him for what he is, isn't it? Angry person say angry thing, isn't it? Deluded person say deluded thing, isn't it? Then you become peaceful, isn't it? Then what you do? Very simple. Sorry, sorry. Mr. So, you terrible. Very sorry if I have done that. And then you resolve it, understand? Then you act, understand? You need to apologize, you apologize. Don't go and become fearful and timid, understand? Then you act. Act with what? Noble Eightfold Path. Right speech. Talk to him nicely, understand? Need to apologize, apologize first. I will come and see you now. We have to rectify this. I hope it's still in time. Otherwise, we got no choice. We have to do something for you. So either you go to the client and apologize, or try to sort things out through right speech, right action, and right thought. No fear, no worry, no anxiety, no reaction. Don't be afflicted and become miserable. This is how you reverse it. So the next time you listen, you know how to listen already. But most of you who are non-cultivator, who have not meditated, who have not insight into the phenomena, the wisdom not there, you cannot handle it. Every time it comes, you fearful. You're miserable. I tell you. Then you come back, no more to eat also. Then if you are the housewife, your kid asks you, Mommy, no dinner. I tell you, you will erupt in front of him. You say, enough. I have enough from the office. You don't come and add problem to my misery. Otherwise, you will yell at the floor. You want to eat, go and see father lah. Or you just say, go and cook yourself. So big reason, someone wait for mommy. Because you already emotional and unhappy. That's how you will react. So your suffering will affect your kid, your children, your loved one. That's why sometimes you must understand why your husband come back miserable, not happy. That means he got problem in the office, or with colleague or friend. Then sometimes, why are you emotional? Then why are your children having emotional? You are in school, something must have happened. If you have this ability to be observant, mindful, aware and heedful, you will see all this. You will understand them. Then you will know how to talk to them. And you are not affected or affected at all. So this is how the meditation works. So every time sense door consciousness come to be, where you are sitting in the meditative posture or in the daily life, then you start to understand how you are conditioned into fear, worry, anxiety, and negativity, and how this evil root comes to be through delusion. Then how is the root of all evil? How it make you suffer and miserable? Then how Dhammapada verse 1 and 2 come to be? How Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23 become so true? Whenever you are heedless, suffering is the result. Understand not? So you determine to be heedful. Then after that, you determine to cultivate. Understand not? Means avoid Dhammapada verse 1. Means you are always heedful, ever mindful of your action, speech, and thought. So that the mental intention behind your action, speech, and thought, which is the source or basis of all karma. Understand not? Is being taken care of. So if the mental intention behind all your action, speech and thought is free of the evil root, then Dhammapada verse 2 will take its course. Understand? You will act, speak and think with a pure mind, a wholesome mind, free of the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. And then happiness will follow you, like your shadow that never leaves you. And this is how you cultivate. Understand? Then at the thought level, you use your four right effort. The four right effort is to abandon the unwholesome thought that has arisen. So abandoning one is like you radiate metta, the first two ways, think of the consequence, or meditate, just silence your mind. But this one don't give you long-term solution. No. The long-term solution is the fourth one, wisdom. And when you have wisdom, next time you listen or see or think, you are peaceful. You have equanimity. You have wisdom. You have understanding. You can see things as they are. You can accept them for what they are. And then you become different. Then you just laugh. Just like one of the Dhamma friends told me, I think about a few weeks back, I think Hui Rong's good friend, he said, there was one day, one customer came in, I think quite a big shot. Must be a dato or the door, got a chauffeur. He was so angry. He came into the office, then he looked for the person in charge. Then they direct him to her. So she was in the office. Yes, she hate that division. He went in only, he scolded her. He said, I will sue your company, I will make sure your company pay for you everything. So say a lot of very nasty things. Then he said, I'm going to call your boss now. Then you know what happened? The phone went through. Then he talked to the boss. Then the boss got no choice, had to show the client something. He said, I will pass the phone to your staff now. Then the boss, when she took over the phone, the boss scolded her for 15 minutes on the phone in front of the client, very angrily. And you know what happened to her? She was so surprised. The mind was so still and so quiet. She can just take everything as if it's just normal. He didn't even react at all. He just said, yes, okay. I will check on it. Well, she just came back. Then I will check on it. Then later on, he went to the bookshop and checked. And the car was not ready, So still a lot of issue. Then after that, this guy also fed up already. He said, I'm going to file a complaint. So he said, I'm going office. He said, come back later. So he went off. Then you know what happened? Lunch break. He still going to make his lunch, packing, and was eating down there. Then the staff all knew about it. One of the staff came in and asked, he said, you can still eat? You know what she told her? What's wrong? Nothing happened. You mean nothing happened? This guy was scolding everybody outside, looking for you, and you were in front with the phone, kena firing from the boss for 15 minutes. Yeah, so what? Because she understands. You resolve the issue. Don't take it personally. Don't go and react to all those things. Because you accept them for what they are. Then you know what happened? After 1 hour later, this guy come back. He apologized to her. He said, very sorry. He said, I finally met my driver. Then I got the whole thing sorted out. It's not your mistake. My driver's mistake. That's why. Then she also feel like every time I used to tell her this, I said, you live by the Dhamma, you have your good nature, you don't worry. Everything will go your way. Understand? You will be like very lucky one. And really what happened? That's why she came and tell me, she don't believe. She said she also feel very strange. How come suddenly she like that? But she has been cultivating for many years. Morning, night, she cultivate one. Religion. She follow what I tell her. Then she went on a few spiritual trips. Thailand, then recently to India. And she came back, she was beautiful. That's why I tell you, it can be done. And she is actually early on quite new to Dhamma also. Before she met me, she was following another type of Buddhism. A lot of different practices. That one, she couldn't find the answer to life. Then after she met me, she shift her cultivation, and she developed another, and now she is so different, so different. So this is how the Dhamma, if properly developed, cultivated, and understood, can help you, can help change your life. and make you very peaceful and very happy, despite what happened, Sana. Okay? I think we better do our meditation.
What's the time now? Oh yeah, 5:07
maybe. Okay, you all can start your meditation. For those, they are new. Okay, I will teach you, I give you some instruction. For those who are new, today I don't have much time. I will do the explanation later. I just give you some instruction to calm your mind down. I will teach you how to do the mind sweeping method. Then after that, how to train your mind to become mindful of your in and out breath, your breathing. Okay, can somebody off the light? Off the light. Okay. For those who already know how to meditate, you can start your meditation straight away. For those who are new, you just relax your body and mind, silence everything, close your eyes, then make sure you have a stable posture that can allow you to sit for at least about half an hour or so. Then you make sure your backbone is straight, backbone. Then you maintain attention or awareness at your forehead. Just feel your forehead. Don't think. Feel. If there's any tension, any tightness, or any stress within, you just silently, soothingly relax, relax, and relax every part of your forehead. Then you move your attention down to your eye muscle. Do the same. Feel and relax every part of your eye muscle. Then you go to your facial muscle. Feel every part. Then soothingly relax the facial muscle. Feel it soothingly, relax, relax. Just feel and relax. Don't think. Then if you find it difficult to relax your facial muscle, then you can radiate a radiant smile. Visualize yourself facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. When you can smile, there's a lot of joy in you, and it will naturally relax your facial muscle. So you visualize yourself facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. Then you radiate loving kindness or metta to your own form and mind. You can recite as follows. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. As you recite, may I, you must feel your body and mind. Be well and happy, well and happy. As you recite well and happy, you feel it. Feel the well-being in your entire physical body and mind. Feel the happiness in your entire physical body and mind. Then you can repeat it one or two more times. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. May it too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May it too be free from all mental negativity. May this mind of mine be free from any envy, jealousy, ill will, and negative mental state. May it too be without enmity, without ill will, and untrouble. And may it keep itself happy and peaceful only. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then you continue to radiate this metta or love to all your loved ones, all beings that are within this vicinity and the entire universe. May all my loved ones and may all beings within this vicinity, known and unknown, seen and unseen, and all beings within the entire existence, the entire universe,
be well and happy, well and happy. May they all too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May they all too be free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then after that, you come back to your facial muscle, feel it soothingly relax. Then you move your attention or mindfulness down to your neck. Feel, relax. Shoulder, feel, relax. Hand, feel, relax. Back to shoulder. Then you move your attention to your heart area or your chest area. You just silence your mind and feel. If you can detect any heartbeat or any vibration, you just silence your mind and just feel it. If you are new, if you can't, then it's okay. You just feel your body or chest area. Then you just relax, relax, and relax. Just like how you relax your forehead, relax every muscle within. Then you move your attention down to your stomach. Do the same. Feel, relax. Then after that, you move your attention to your stomach. Feel and relax. Then your leg, your buttock, feel and relax. Then you can reverse all this. From your leg, feel, relax. Buttock, feel, relax. Abdomen, feel, relax. Stomach, feel, relax. Then body, chest area, feel, relax. Shoulder, hand, back to shoulder. Neck, feel and relax. Then facial muscle, feel, relax. Eye muscle, feel, relax. Then forehead. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful. If you choose to repeat this mind sweeping method one more round, you can do it. This will allow you to decondition your heedless thinking and to train your mind to be at the location you want it to be. You want it to be at the forehead, it will stay there. You want it to be at the heart, it will stay there. Then after that, I will train you to develop mindfulness of in and out breath, or what the Buddha called anapanasati meditation. Anapana is in and out breath, sati is mindfulness. So anapanasati is mindfulness of the in and out breath. So you just silence your mind, then maintain attention in front of your nostril instead of your forehead. Now you feel your breathing in front of your nostril. You just silence your mind and just feel. Then like the Buddha said, breathing in, you are aware. Breathing out, you are aware. Means allow your silent mind, your awareness to detect your breathing. Then as you detect your breathing, the mind and the breath move as one without thought. That is sati. Yeah. So that's why like the Buddha said, breathing in, the mind is aware. Breathing out, the mind is aware. You just continue training your mind this way. Initially, it's very difficult because the mind like wanders off very fast. Split second, it's gone. It's okay. Just be patient. Then patiently bring it back to the awareness. Just maintain awareness of the in and out breath. Continue to train. After a while, if you are patient enough, it will become very peaceful, very quiet. Then you will settle down in anapanasati. Then during that time, you can experience what they call spiritual calmness, leading to the spiritual joy and the spiritual rapture that they call piti. Then as you allow it to stabilize, more and more refined, piti will transform into sukha, which is a very blissful state. Then after that, you continue to relax, silent and aware, it will become positive, tranquility. So this is the first training. Okay, I will allow you to develop your own training. Then I will ring the bell after about another 15 minutes. 15 minutes. Okay. Okay. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have not, can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness that you have developed. Try to maintain them for as long as you can. The mind that is trained listens to you. When you want it to be peaceful, you will be peaceful. When you want it to be at the forehead, it will stay at the forehead. When you want it to feel relaxed, it will just do that. A mind that is trained is very peaceful and very useful. Whereas the untrained mind is very heedless, like a devil's workshop, very restless, full of hindrance. Okay, can someone on the line? On the line. For those who are new, I need to explain a little bit more. This initial training of the mind to be aware, to have the inner awareness, inner peace, and the silence is just a training. Because the mind that is heedless needs to be trained. The mind that is heedless has a lot of hindrance. Because it thinks a lot, it wanders off very fast. It is not trained. The hindrance are the one that cause you to be heedless. Mental hindrance, there are five, the Buddha said. The first two is sensual desire and ill will. Like the word sensual desire, you desire whatever you experience through your senses. Like when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, or tactile feel something, or think of something. If that sense experience is pleasant or pleasurable, you will develop desire for it to be repeated. Like good experience. Like when you see something very soothing, very pleasant, very beautiful. Then sometimes you are not mindful, not aware. There is this craving or desire or sensual desire to be preoccupied with that sense experience. So when this happens, you lost your ability to be aware. The mind is no longer aware with the silent mind to see things as they are. The mind has been preoccupied or distracted by that sense experience. Means you are preoccupied with what you see, what you think, and the desire for it to be repeated. A mind that does that, cannot see things as they are, is no longer mindful. That's why sensual desire is a hindrance. It hinders you from becoming peaceful, silent, and quiet. Then likewise, the opposite sense experience. If it's something you don't like, there is this aversion inside, dislike for the sense experience, unpleasant sense experience. So your like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, your reaction to what you see throughout the day, what you hear and what you think throughout the day, or even taste, smell, and tactile feel, creates hindrance of mind, either sensual desire or ill will. So if that is happening to you, if almost every moment of your sense experience, this sensual desire and ill will, like and dislike, or pleasant and pleasant sense experience, keep on oscillating, it will become a habit. You will develop habitual tendency over it. That's why every time you see certain thing, you react in certain specific way. Or when you hear something you don't like, you react in certain specific way. So your mental state oscillates between like and dislike. It's seldom in the state of equanimity. That's why you cannot be
in the state of equanimity, silent, to see things as they are. So this hindrance become powerful because over time it become a habitual tendency. So when it become a habitual tendency, means you keep on reacting in this way. That's why the mind think a lot, react a lot, comment a lot, very busy, very busybody. Yeah? They say in Hokkien, very kepo. So it like to react, judge, comment, then get caught in it and get yourself entangled in it. This is how the mind become heedless, the Buddha said. You no longer aware, no longer heedful. You are lost in thought. The other hindrance of mind is sleepiness. When you don't see the importance of meditation, cultivation, every time you do it, you become sleepy. So that is called sloth and torpor. Another mental hindrance. Then the fourth one is the most common. The Buddha said, when things don't go your way, when you cannot get what you want, when there are situations or life problems that trigger of fear, worry, anxiety, sadness, sorrow and lamentation, then your mind becomes restless. Understand now? Restless because you have anxiety, you have fear, you have worry, you have unhappiness. That's why it thinks a lot, it worries a lot. And this is a hindrance. That's why you cannot meditate. Sometimes you come here to meditate, you feel sleepy. Then the thought comes. You worry about this, worry about that. So many unfinished activity and situation of life. Especially when you don't keep your precept. There is fear. A lot of fear and insecurity of what might happen or what may happen. So these hindrances are very powerful. Then the last one is doubt. When you are not sure what is the correct meditation and how to go about doing certain things, that doubt will create the lack of confidence, the lack of faith in the teaching and the Buddha. So because of that, this mental hindrance, the five of them, they hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of peace and calm. That's why you become heedless. You cannot meditate. So when you understand that this is the cause, you must cultivate the opposite five. The opposite five spiritual faculty. That's why you must reflect on the great quality of the Buddha, the great teaching of his Buddha, of the Buddha. How wonderful and beautiful that teaching is, because it can bring about enlightenment, transformation. So when you do that, your faith and confident in him and his teaching become very, very strong. Then your mind become very composed. Then no more doubt, no more fear, no more worry, no more restlessness. So faith, if it's developed properly, is of great benefit. With faith, there is confidence in yourself. It's just like when you go through life, when you have the confidence to do well, half your battle is won. When you are not confident, you normally fail. Then the other aspect of the spiritual faculty is, after your faith is very strong, virya has to arise. Virya is a spiritual zeal, tenacity to walk this way. After knowing how special the Buddha is and how wonderful his teaching is, then you determine to cultivate, to walk this way. Then there is an energy from the heart that drives you to meditate, to cultivate. And then when you do that, sati will be developed, the third spiritual faculty, mindfulness. And this is how you train. Yeah. And when you see the importance of mindfulness, you will determine to understand what is mindfulness. Mindfulness is when there is no thought. When you are silent, you are already aware and mindful. Don't try to be mindful. Then when the mind is with the phenomena, without thought, then you are already aware and mindful. That's why, like anapanasati, when the mind and the breath move as one without thought, you are developing mindfulness of this in and out breath. So mindfulness can be developed when your mind is silent. Whenever you are silent, you are already mindful. But the trouble is you cannot be silent because of the mental hindrance. That's why you have to cultivate the spiritual faculty. But before it comes, it stabilizes, you think a lot. The hindrance are there. So what you need to do is you have to decondition this heedless thinking. Instead of stopping it, you now condition it to a different state. Means you decondition the heedless thinking through stopping it from thinking by feeling. That's why you do the mind sweeping method. You go to your forehead, you feel, then you relax, no more thinking. Then you sweep it down, feel, relax. This type of training has a lot of advantages. First, it deconditions your heedless thinking through feeling and relaxing. Then your mind becomes more and more calm, more and more peaceful. Then the second advantage is it trains your mind to be at the location you want it to be. You want it to be at the forehead, it stay there. You want it to be at the heart, it stay there. Then you want it to be at the dome, it stay there. Yeah. So my sweeping method is very advantageous, very useful. Then after you have done that, you become more peaceful, more quiet. But your sati is not stable. Your mindfulness is not stable. So you have to anchor it to something. They give you an object of meditation. In this particular case, the Buddha preferred the breathing. Because the breathing is very neutral object. Common to all. Everybody has the breath as long as you are still living. Then your breath is always in the present moment with you all the time. So you train your mind to be mindful of this in and out breath. You are training your mind to be in the moment without thought, just aware. Yeah. So when you do that, when you anchor the mind in this way, it becomes very calm, very peaceful, very still. Then it will return to its original state of silence. That's why you need to train. Then after a while, this anapanasati will stabilize. Then like, you are always aware of the breathing. But then you need to live life. You cannot just do awareness of in and out breath. Like those people who note all the other objects of meditation, rising and falling, all those things. No point. Understand? But you have to live life. You have to come out into life. So anapanasati is just the initial training, initial skill for me to train your mind to be aware and stabilize it. So stabilizing it means allowing it to be more and more refined, more and more subtle, until the breathing becomes very subtle, very quiet, like no more breathing. During this moment, all of your, what they call mind state, will be transformed from piti to sukha, sukha to pasati. Pasati is tranquility of mind or stillness of mind, silent mind without thought. This is the meditative mind. So when you reach this state, little or no more breathing, don't panic. You just silence your mind and stay there. If you are patient enough, after a while, the breathing will come back. The very subtle breathing, you will be able to detect. Because your mind need to develop this more refined mindfulness to deal with the refined breathing, the very fine breathing. Those who do rising, falling, same. That time you don't go and do all these other foolish techniques like sitting, touching. Just silence your mind. Don't verbalize anymore. Just silence and just feel. Then it will come back. Then after that, what happens next is when you are able to do that, this mind becomes silent, still, on its own, without the object of meditation. Then by then, you can even let go of the breathing. The mind is already in sati, silent, quiet, peaceful, aware. And then wherever you place your mind, it will be aware there. And that is the meditative mind. So during that time, you can try to move it down to your heart and just silent and see what happens. So meditation is about training this mind to be aware, then stabilizing it. Then after that, when you come out of it, you need to maintain this mind state that you have trained to live your daily life. And that is the real meditation. Then use it to cultivate noble eightfold path. That is the real meditation. It is the daily mindfulness, the daily meditative training of the four foundations of mindfulness that will lead to wisdom, the real meditation. So that summarizes what you need to know. Yeah? Okay, now I will open it up for question and answer and reporting of meditation. If you want to report your meditation, you can. If you got any question, you can ask. Okay? How you feel just now? Can you meditate?
Yeah. It's alright.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes there are thoughts that come in. So
sometimes what?
There are thoughts that come
in.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah.
There will be a lot of thoughts. If it sometimes got thought, means you are not bad. Because new people, new yogi, they think a lot. Because the mind is heedless, understand not? You turn that a bit there. Just turn that direction. No, the handle. No, turn away from the mic. Okay. Thank you. See, you sometimes got thought, sometimes no thought, means it's a good sign because you are new. So most people, they can't even stay for a split second without thought. The thought keep on coming and it keep on making you heedless, understand? Like you lose mindfulness. You try to be aware of the breathing. Split second is gone. Understand? Then it wander off and get lost in the thinking, the thought process. That's why the heedless mind think a lot. Understand? Cannot be peaceful. So you need to decondition this heedless thinking. That's why I teach you the mind sweeping method. So initially when you do that and radiate metta, you feel more calm, you know, more peaceful. You know. You should do that more. Do that more. Then only later on come and do anapanasati. Anapanasati, you must be patient. Normally, if you are patient enough, every sitting you can do 15, 20 minutes. It will come very fast. Sometime within 1 or 2 days, it will stabilize. If you have done it in the past, that same sitting, it will stabilize. Otherwise, you need to extend it to morning when you wake up, you do 15-20 minutes. Then at night before you sleep, you do. It will bring about very good sleep. Then it will also bring about the benefits of meditation. You see, the benefit of this type of training is it will bring about the first immediate benefit of inner peace. You become more calm, more peaceful. Then when you radiate love and happiness to yourself, may I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy. You feel the well-being and happiness within your entire body and mind. You have inner well-being, understand not? So inner peace leading to inner well-being is a very good mind state. That's why you feel very good, and you feel very calm, very peaceful, and you can sleep better. Then it will lead to clarity of mind. And when you have clarity of mind, you can see things as they are, you become more wise. You have clarity that allow you to see things clearly and make better decisions. Understand not? And we are not panicked, not restless. That's why you can calm yourself down. And with that clarity, you make better decisions. That's why you can also become more efficient in your work. You study better. All this will come with it. Then with the understanding, born of the clarity, you develop understanding and wisdom faster. So, inner peace, inner well-being, leading to clarity of mind is very important. Because peace is very difficult to come by for normal human beings. So when you can have inner peace, born of piti, sukha, these mental states are very good. Then after that, The clarity of mind bring about understanding, wisdom, make you more efficient, make you make better decision, then it will allow you to sleep better. Then the wisdom can make you wise, enlightened. Then of course there are this spin-off from the benefits, the byproduct of it. After you have developed this ability to be mindful, to be aware, you can become a different human being. Because the awareness will protect you from arising the wrong thought, wrong speech and wrong action. You can see your mental intention very clearly. Then you will understand how you get into trouble. Then you will know how to reverse all this through an understanding. That's how wisdom come to be. Then when your mind can be constantly aware and silent, one day when the conditions are there, you can insight into phenomena. There are these three types of phenomena: physical phenomena, nature's phenomena, and your mind, mental phenomena. So you will be able to insight into all these phenomena of nature, your physical phenomena and your mental phenomena. Then you will awaken to them. The universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state and non-self. You will see them. Then you will understand them very clearly. Yeah. Especially when you can develop the mindfulness until it's so stable, until there is so much clarity. Then you can be at the moment of its arising, sustaining and passing away of the very phenomena. When you can see that very often, you are very near to enlightenment. Then all of a sudden, you just wake up. You insight into it. Then you just understand clearly that all phenomena has this characteristic. It is impermanent. If you grasp and hold and cling, it leads to suffering. And because it's impermanent, it's empty. It's not a permanent, unchanging entity where you can hold on to, grasp onto, and cling onto, and say, this is me. This is I, and this can be mine. All this you will understand. Okay? So, initially, as far as the meditation is concerned, you need to train. Then she will get you the notes, the email compilation. It has some notes there that can guide you to do this. Mind sweeping method followed by anapanasati training, then you also have metta, loving kindness combined. So you can read through it, then practice at home. Then after that, when you are free, if they send out the sharing, you can listen to the recording again. It can help you. Okay, any other question? No. Is it your sister? Oh, look the same, She is younger. Yeah. Oh, the mother, Wow, same, Is it your grandma? Oh, your mom, Very good, yeah. She is very happy. What about a sister? You want to report your meditation? More shy, What about others? Anybody wants to report? Hui Rong, very quiet today, you. Pass to her the mic. She got a lot of questions.
我觉得这个问题已经困扰我一阵子了。
Okay.
以前我都是习惯睡觉前跟起床后我会做 meditation。那一向都我认为都很 OK。可是大概从去年年底开，不是，应该是去年年底开始，我觉得。
不大适合呢，
不是不适合，而是我变成 我变成我不能哦。
哦、OK
然后我每次我想要每天的例行工作的时候，我觉得我变成好像在发呆、
oh.
不是发呆的那种感觉，是我就是一片空白，然后、
okay.
那种好像你不存在了、
oh, okay.
可是不是以前那种很好的不存在的那种感觉
啊，对、
然后我有点不是害怕也不是紧张，我只是觉得因为我不愿意这样子的方式下去
OK
然后我就禅听
啊，
一直到这几天我还是只能用这种方式
OK
然后我会问我自己
啊，
这是怎么一回事
哦、OK 很好，
我不知道为什么
可以我能够回答你 very good 啊，幸运你问出来，这个你应该要问出来 ，otherwise 他会 lock you for very long。You see, what her question is, because she is from Taiwan, she only know Mandarin, so pardon her. Her question is, last time she used to do this routine meditation before she sleep and after she wake up. But recently, she find it like.It's not like before anymore. He like doesn't like to do. Then there is some thought that tell her that she prefer to do something else. Because she like the feeling inside she doesn't like to do. Cannot do, not to say doesn't like to do. Then what happened was the mind starts to query and ask question. Try to do chanting and all those things.Then try to reason. 那个就是你的问题，那个就是你的 obstruction, 你要 breakthrough 的，很容易的。The way to breakthrough is just to always remember, let things be. Understand that? Don't allow the thought to condition you into like and dislike, right and wrong, must do, must not do, then conflict arise. 因为你已经给那个 conditioning, 因为以前好像你听我讲 Brother Teo say you can before you sleep and after you wake up, 你又不敢 go against but 你觉得你做不到 but after some time it doesn't work anymore, so this is what you have to learn. You don't go believe anything that people tell you, because you are you, understand? You are unique, 你自己跟别人不一样，你有自己的方式，是吧 ？You got your own way， 哎，你的方式是这样，因为你的爸是这样，所以你要了解才能够做。But 你的 problem 就是你制造那个念头，是吧 ？You cannot accord and flow， 明白吗？随缘呐，没接受。If the thought come like that， I question the thought， no use。Because you have more questions, I just accept. Okay, if I'm not in the mood to do, I don't have to do. Then what do? I do daily mindfulness. Then I just continue to be aware. Then I just continue to accept whatever situation and condition that arise. Then 你就 suddenly realize, 你就平静下来了，因为你没有跟他争了。You don't want to argue with that thought anymore. There is no more right and wrong now. Understand now? Whether I do or I don't do is no more issue. Well, when my mind is like that, I will do this. When my mind is otherwise, I will do that. Then later on, if it come back, I will do the morning and the night meditation. If it don't come back, then let it be. That's why echo and flow, the meaning is let things be. Accept the reality of the moment and just flow.That's why for me, sometimes I'm very tired or what, I just sleep. Understand? Even very important, they say you must meditate. No, when I'm tired, I just sleep. Understand? But when certain day, like during my early days of cultivation, while in the university, I remember, there was certain day I cannot sleep. You know. My mind is so bright, you know, so full of energy. You know. And then I just meditate. Understand? You don't go and force yourself to sleep. Oh, you midnight already still cannot sleep. Then you blame your Chinese tea, you blame your coffee. Actually, nothing to do with that. Because there was one day, I tell you, when I was in the third year university, one day, whole day, very strange, you know, the energy was so strong. I was throughout the day awake, you know, even until midnight. I just know that I couldn't sleep because there is so much mental energy. Then I can just continue to study until the next morning, 6, 7 o'clock, not tired at all. Then I came to realize not only me, you know, the other classmate also same, you know, where he was in the same room as me. You know. Don't know whether influenced by me or what, I don't know. No. He was my roommate. We got three roommates inside that room. But only me and him, we felt the same. The other one was sleeping. So you just accord and flow. But there is no such thing as right or wrong. Right and wrong is a convention fixed by the human mind. So forget about right and wrong. Don't try to argue with the thought. Don't try to follow what people say or do. You just allow your mind to flow and echo with whatever the condition is. Condition is like that, I will know how to deal with it. Then I will just flow and echo and apply Noble Eightfold Path, then remain heedful to live my life. Understand? Then when I'm tired, I need to sleep, I sleep. When I need to do certain things, if I have the condition to do, I will do. Understand? Then when you drive, halfway same. When the condition is different, you cannot say, hey, I really decide to go there, no. Then you force yourself to go there. No. For me, when I drive, when I see certain condition not right, then I make a decision. I will change the whole thing. I say, not meant to be. Not meant to go. Then I just reverse and I just go back. Understand? Because sometimes the sign will come. It will show it to you. And life is like that. Meditation is like that. Cultivation is like that. Then 你的问题就会解决。 Otherwise, 它会沉着你很久, because your character is like that. You hold on to your problem until it is solved one. No. Otherwise, you will continue to have that problem one. So, lucky you ask. So, 它就能够帮你有那个 wisdom, understanding to free. Okay? Okay, we need to stop, I think. Oh, 6:05 already. We will do the sharing of merits, transfer of merits. Then you make your aspiration. Then we end. There is a chanting sheet there. You tell them the page. What is the page? Sharing of merits with the devas. This is the closing puja. What page is it? No Niman. At the end or what? At the end. To make devas participate in our merits, sharing our merits with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyantang anamoditwa chirang rakantu lokasasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits, and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transfer merits to departed one. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Let this merit accrue to our departed relatives and those who can receive them. And may they all too be well and happy always.
Okay, we will invoke the blessing for our nation. Devosatukalena sasasampati hetocha pito bhavatu lokocha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be a rich and good harvest throughout. May the world be prosperous. May the world be prosperous and full of abundance. And may the government of the day, the king and the rulers, be righteous. Okay, now we make our aspiration. Ipmina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya. By the grace of this merit that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one, until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and Lord Buddha. Then we end.